All right. Well, thanks everyone for being here tonight. So this is our fifth meeting of the Veers Mill Corridor Master Plan. And there's some familiar faces and some new faces. Thanks for everyone for being here tonight. My name's Jessica McVary, and I am a planner with the Montgomery County Planning Department, and I'm the project manager for the Veers Mill Corridor Master Plan. Several of my colleagues are also here tonight. So at the table outside, we have Dan Janicek and Rhoda Herson-Ringskog, Luis Estrada, Steve Aldrich, our Deputy Director Rose Krasnow, Katie Mancarini, Nancy Surgeon, Dave Onsbacher, and Carrie Sanders, our Division Chief. If you have any questions as we proceed throughout the night tonight, feel free to grab any of us and chat with us. So as many of you are aware, we initiated the Veers Mill Corridor Master Plan in January of 2017, and we held our first community meeting in February. Over the last several months, we've held three additional community meetings and participated in several neighborhood events. Liz, if you could go to the next slide. Thanks. And we've held these, you know, participated in these events and held these meetings really to learn about the community's priorities as well as exchange information with the community. And the feedback that we've received has helped us to frame the vision of the plan and the purpose of the plan. And then the plan vision is to preserve and strengthen the Veers Mill communities by enhancing existing community resources, increasing connectivity, and promoting safety in the public realm. So a primary goal of the plan is to improve safety, connectivity, and mobility along Veers Mill Road. And we recently hired a consultant, Kittleson and Associates, to help us develop strategies to achieve this goal. Several members of the Kittleson team are here with us this evening, and they'll be doing a presentation as well as sharing information on the display boards behind us. So I'll introduce Liz Gordon in just a minute, but prior to doing so, just to kind of give you a little bit of an overview, improved safety on roads is a goal of Montgomery County, and the County Council actually passed a resolution in February 2016 to adopt Vision Zero, which is an international movement to eliminate fatalities and severe injuries on roads, and they've adopted this goal to do so by 2030. The Kittleson team will discuss Vision Zero more generally in a few minutes, but our team really believed that the elements of Vision Zero were critical to consider along Veers Mill due to the fatalities and the severe injuries which have occurred on the roadway over the last several years. The team may discuss this in greater detail, but Vision Zero typically includes physical or engineering solutions as well as education and enforcement. And the things that you'll be looking at tonight are more physical or engineering related than engineering or enforcement. So this evening's presentation is a little more technical in nature than we've had in the past, but it's really intended to provide some background information about potential short-term strategies and long-term concepts to improve safety and enhance mobility. So following the presentation, we'll invite you to the display boards in the back to speak with the Kittleson team as well as staff members about what you've heard in the presentation and what's on the boards. And then we'll reconvene as a group to recap the conversation and talk about next steps. So with that, I'll introduce Elizabeth Gordon with Kittleson and Associates.
Thank you. You can call me Liz. It's cool. But really, either is fine. Thank you so much for coming this evening. As Jessica said, our focus tonight is a bit of a kind of subset of the vision of the plan as a whole. In particular, we're kind of narrowly focused on road safety. Vision Zero, as was mentioned before, is something that is going on internationally, and it is in response, in the U.S. at least, to the approximately 34,000 road deaths that occur each year. So it's a recognition that this is a serious public health problem. Montgomery County, as was mentioned, has adopted Vision Zero. And taken a leadership role, urged the state of Maryland to do the same. So why Veers Mill? If Vision Zero is something that's relatively recently adopted, why is it being applied to Veers Mill? A few reasons. First off, the recent fatalities and serious injuries that have occurred on the corridor, which I think you're all probably aware of. It also has a lot of transit along the corridor, so many vulnerable road users, that's primarily pedestrians and people accessing transit, are already here along the corridor. And in addition to the serious injuries and fatalities, we know that there are a lot of near misses. So this is a place where that leadership role that the county is taking in Vision Zero can really be applied, and we can talk about kind of what it would take to achieve a safe condition. That map there is a map of where the fatalities and severe injuries along and near Veers Mill have occurred in the last few years, 2012 to 2016. So this study, and when I say this study, I mean the Vision Zero portion, had a much narrower scope than what Jessica described. And basically, we were brought in as sort of outside experts on the subject of road safety to speak to that concern in particular. But we understand that saying, here's what an ideal Veers Mill corridor would look like, doesn't do anything for the people who are already vulnerable road users. So we have two distinct sets of recommendations that we're talking about tonight. One is kind of short to medium term recommendations that we're hoping are feasible within the next 5 years. And then we have another set of long-term concepts or visions for the corridor, which describe two kind of different approaches to achieving safety in the future. And those are ambitious and would require a lot of change. And they take place, are envisioned to take place over a 30 to 50 year timeline. And this is where the people who use the corridor now and care about it now get to weigh in on kind of beginning to envision what this future for the corridor could be. This particular meeting, we'll be talking about the toolbox of short-term solutions and soliciting feedback on those. My colleague Aditya will be at those boards, and he'll be asking you for comments and to weigh in on recommendations that you like, ones that you're less excited about. Tell him about your concerns. And then also the longer-term concepts, which I'll be happy to talk to you about at the boards. And we want feedback on both, but the feedback on the long-term concept will basically be saying, this is a concept that I think is worthy of more consideration versus this one not so much, and we want to hear about that. So to get to the technical topic of creating safety, and I can get really excited about this topic, so forgive me if I get super technical and go on and on, but let's talk about what we know works to create road safety. First off, we can take measures to decrease the frequency of crashes. So crashes between vehicles and vehicles, or vehicles and pedestrians, or vehicles and bikes, we can make them happen less often. And there are a lot of engineering solutions in particular that we can take to do this. We can also, if crashes do happen, we can decrease their severity. So those are two different avenues for creating safety. So how do we decrease crash frequency? So the main way that you, there are two ways that you decrease crash frequency. The first is you reduce conflicts, and the second is that when conflicts occur, you enable successful yielding. So you try to create a condition where if another car gets in front of a car unexpectedly, they can successfully yield. But first, to reduce the conflicts from even happening, you can dedicate space for different travel modes. And that top picture is a dedicated space for bikes to travel in. And so that's very predictable for cars, at least along the segment they know where bikes are going to be. And then at the intersection, you can see the paint, again, indicating to other road users where bikes are going to be. And this isn't a specific recommendation for the Veers Mill corridor. This is an example of how we manage these conflicts. The pedestrian bulb out at the bottom is to reduce crossing distances. And the reason that this can reduce conflicts is if you have a pedestrian who's going to cross a road and it's a relatively short distance or they're only crossing one motion at a time, they're able to look, see, accept a gap, and then make their way across safely. Whereas if it's a very long crossing, it may be harder to judge, especially for children or someone who's vision impaired or mobility impaired. Those longer crossings are tougher to manage the conflict. Also, traffic signalization. That's a major way. When we can't separate different road users in space by giving them their own space, we separate them in time by giving them their own little walk signal to get across the intersection. So those are the big ways that we reduce conflicts. If conflicts do occur, we need to increase the success of yielding. So if you have cars that are driving a bit slower, the drivers are able to see the pedestrians or other conflicting vehicles and therefore engage their brakes faster, and they have a much higher likelihood of successfully yielding in the face of that conflict. The other way to approach safety is to reduce crash severity. So if something does happen and a crash occurs, that the person isn't seriously injured or killed. It gets back to that vision zero vision. So what I'm showing here, and this is a graphic from NACTO, which is the Association of City Transportation Officers, is that different road users, buses, cars, pedestrians, have different mass. They have different weight. And so the more vulnerable road users are the lighter ones. And how much a person is injured kind of depends on that differential. It's a function of weight and speed. Since we can't make a bus weigh 30 pounds, speed is the thing that we can affect. So reducing this the speed that the cars and buses get to is a main way to reduce the severity of the crashes that do occur. This is an illustration of what happens when you change speeds. So at 20 miles an hour, if a pedestrian is hit by a car, 95% of the time they live. At 40 miles an hour, that goes down to 15%. So that's a really big difference. Go ahead. Another way to look at this is this graph here. And what you see happening between 20 and 30 miles an hour is the chance of the pedestrian who's hit at these speeds actually dying, the risk of death, that line is very steep. So it's worth noting that this isn't saying that if cars are going over 30 miles an hour, all pedestrians will get hit and they will die all the time. What it's saying is that if the speed at which the crash occurs is above 30 miles an hour, that that's a very dangerous situation for the person getting hit. These other measures that we're talking about, where we increase the predictability of where these vulnerable road users are, and we take engineering measures to increase the success in yielding, this means that drivers will have more of a chance to slow down, which can increase the safety and the chance that pedestrians will survive. So I know that it can be hard to hear on a roadway that you use to drive on a lot that the speed has to be reduced. But I just want to note that the capacity of the roadway, the amount of time that it takes to get through as well, is really dictated by what happens at the signal. Anyone who has had someone speed past them and then seen that same person at the next red light kind of knows this phenomenon. The fact that Connecticut Avenue needs 60% of the green time at that signal, or whatever the case may be, has a lot more to do on your total end-to-end driving time than the speed that your car reaches. So the number that you get up to on your speedometer doesn't dictate how much time it takes to get through the corridor. What dictates that is your average speed, and that is dictated by the signals. So we have a series of short-term recommendations, which are things that we think can make it safer fast. And here on the slide are just a couple of the types of things that we're thinking about. These are things like take a level sidewalk and route it behind the shorter ramp that comes down from the property so that it remains ADA compliant. so that wheelchair users and people with limited mobility have an easier time. Also, we make recommendations to study whether some of these free right turn lanes, the like slip lanes that come off of Connecticut Avenue and other places, whether those are necessary today based on the traffic. And if they are, then there are ways that we can retrofit them. And what's shown there is a raised crossing, which alerts drivers that there's going to be essentially a speed table. And so they slow down, and they're also alerted that pedestrians are going to be in that space. And so they're able to kind of intelligently manage that conflict that might occur, reduce their speed, and therefore, if a crash does occur, reduce the likelihood that it's going to be severe. As I said, Aditya will be at those boards to talk about each of these recommendations, and there's a whole suite. We also have some long-term concepts, and the word concept is used very deliberately there, because these are two kind of broad approaches to achieving safety in the long term. They are not recommendations for changing the right-of-way quite soon. And in fact, we have sketched cross-sections for each of the concepts that fit in each portion of the corridor. What can be a little confusing about that is that most of what we show on the board is shown for some of these wider, more unconstrained sections of the corridor for a couple reasons. One, that's where more can change because there's more space with which to make changes. And two, that tends to be some of the places where people get going really fast because it really feels like a wide, unconstrained roadway where they want to speed. So just keep in mind that what we're showing isn't necessarily the exact thing that will be right in front of the part of the corridor that you're most familiar with. So the two general concepts are a complete street and a multi-way boulevard, and I'll talk about the difference between them and how each of them kind of approaches achieving safety. So the complete street, I want to note right away that neither of these cross-sections is something that we're recommending for Veers Mill. But a complete street is a concept where it predicts the types of road users that would want to use the corridor. In this case, for Veers Mill, that is drivers, transit riders, bicyclists, pedestrians, wheelchair users. These are the sorts of folks that we expect to be on this corridor. And it provides a comfortable accommodation for each of those modes. So you can see the pedestrians have their space, the bicyclists have their space. In the picture over on the right, the space is separated using grades, using curbs. And in the picture on the left, this is what you'd be more inclined to see in a downtown where the space is separated with on-street parking and flexible posts. But the main thing that I want you to take away from this slide is the approach, where you separate each of the travel modes, each of the types of users on the corridor, you give them their comfortable, well-designed space, and then where those modes must interact with each other, you have a traffic signal, with the exception of driveways and other kind of low-volume interactions, and that's how you manage those conflicts. The other concept is different. It's called a multi-way boulevard, and how it approaches safety, this is what you might think of as more of like a European approach, and how it approaches safety is it visually constrains the corridor using parallel rows of trees. Instead of separating each mode, it separates long distance trips from access trips. And where the conflicts occur, which again is at the intersections, it has used these traffic calming features to make the speeds low enough that each of the road users can intelligently manage that conflict and make good decisions. And that's a different approach. I understand that not all of Veers Mill Corridor has current frontage roads, which could be reconfigured to work in this way. So in the narrower sections, the pedestrian space would be more like a shared use path, a side path adjacent to the roadway. But the theme of separating from the main line of traffic with parallel rows of trees would be continued. And I actually have another slide on this, so we can look again. So at opportunities to get from the access street onto the main line, you do have these regular opportunities to have a signalized motion to reconnect with the main line. And again, it does really rely on a kind of constrained visual sense of the corridor and regular signalization to get drivers to lower their speeds. Presumably also the speed limit would be lowered, but the hope is that the design speed, the speed that it feels safe to drive, is what would really be regulating people's behavior. Clearly, we need to talk a lot more about these to get any meaningful feedback on them. And we're hoping that that conversation can happen between each of you and me or Adam or Aditya at the boards, and that we can get your feedback written down and recorded, and so we can learn from you things we might have missed. After we have those discussions, we're going to report back to the whole group so that important discussions that were had at the boards get reflected to everybody. And at that point, also, Jessica will come back up and kind of talk about next steps. Does anyone have a question that they think is better for the full group as opposed to staff members at the boards? Sure.
I think we are recording it now, so. Okay. So I want to know how much has been thought of to integrate speed cameras on De Beers Mill. When you talk about a deterrent for speed, that is a very effective one on Connecticut Avenue. I mean, between 495 and my house, if you turn at Adams Drive, there's at least four cameras there. Why haven't we installed any kind of speed cameras on Beers Mill to slow them down?
Sure. So I can take a stab at answering that, but I'm also, if other team members want to step in, that's great too. So that is something that we have mentioned to the State Highway Administration in the conversations that we've had so far. And, you know, it's an operational item that just they haven't implemented to date. But I do think that we will encourage through our plan that they study the, you know, installation of those cameras, because we agree that they are, in fact, helpful. I think that there is some concern that people slow down for the speed camera and then speed back up. And so we're trying to think about solutions that would maintain consistent, safe travel speeds through the length of the corridor without the installation of a speed camera. But I'll also ask Steve if he wants to.
Hi, I'm Steve Aldrich with the Planning Department. As part of looking at a corridor, the police department and DOT have to look very carefully at traffic safety along the corridor, how speeds are going, in order to determine where the best place is to put speed cameras. They're very careful about responding to that. They don't just don't put cameras out everywhere. So we're hoping, as part of this Vision Zero process, that they'll be taking a much closer look at the application of speed cameras along this corridor. Hopefully feedback from this meeting tonight and this master plan will help in that regard.
I'd like to follow on. How much experience do any of you or all of you collectively have with traffic in this area? Do you live in this area?
I do.
Where do you, what street do you live? I don't want to get personal, but what street do you live on, sir?
Littleton.
And that is by? Randolph Corner. Is that like by Randolph Road? Again, nothing to me. I live right here off of Maple View, right in front of Newport Mill Middle School. You take that road, I bet you, to get to Connecticut Avenue. It's a straight shot. The traffic, any day, every day, 2 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock in the afternoon, well, not 6 o'clock in the afternoon, then it's gummed up with traffic. You've got the speedsters who are running their crotch rockets up and down, drag racing their little, highly tuned little, what I call gnats butt cars, Hondas, up and down Connecticut, doing U-turns on Connecticut, just so they can drag. This is any day, every day. Doesn't matter what time of day, except for the regular traffic flow to and from work. That is where some of your problem is. That's where a lot of your problem is. Now, the Connecticut Veers Mill intersection is one of the worst, both in the volume of traffic and the speed. We have people jumping off of Veers Mill turning onto Gale Street to Huggins to take the little bypass along the waterway just so they can shortcut and get onto Connecticut because the traffic is backed up. Those cars do not go at 20 miles an hour. We're lucky if they go at 30 miles an hour. Again, it's another drag race.
Great, thank you.
Dave Helms with Potomac Peddlers. These people are the engineers and the planners, so they're not going to do speed much. But if you're interested in more safe speed, you should talk to the county police, MCDOT. I've engaged with them, trying to advocate for safer crossing a Henson Trail where we had two cyclists die killed in a year. And the speed limit is 45. You cannot put automatic speed detection ticketing there. It has to be low 40. So if you support more sane speeds on this road, there's some engineering problems that you got to overcome and make people feel like it's slower. But if you want enforcement, you got to engage MCDOT and the county police. And county police are reticent to get out there. They're just not going to do it. But you can make a difference.
And I would add to that, that as we mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, we're really focusing on sort of the physical or the engineering solutions tonight, or potential solutions, and that, the county, as part of their Vision Zero work, which they're in the process of kicking off their work and their action plan, they will begin to look at things like enforcement, including, how to deter speed.
Know in regards to the two street designs that you showed above, how would you make the determination as to which one you will actually consider?
Yeah, so both of these designs is going to be included in, or both of these concepts is going to be included in our memo. One of them is going to get fleshed out in greater detail than the other, and we are hoping that the feedback from this meeting can let us know which people are more excited about, which they feel needs more detail, because it is a long time period, but there's no day like today to weigh in and start thinking about these things. Go ahead. Sure. Yeah.
So with all of those trees there, it would be difficult, especially at night, if there's an individual jaywalking and they're standing there mm-hmm. where the tree is, then all of a sudden they dart out.
Yeah.
Then that yeah. would be a problem.
Yeah, that's absolutely a concern. And I can absolutely see how, imagining how the corridor is today with the top speeds that are reached today, imagining someone jumping out from a row of vegetation sounds really terrifying as a driver. I do think that the hope would be that the design would include adequate lighting so that does mitigate some of that. B, provide crossings at more regular frequencies because pedestrians and bicyclists both are sensitive to detour like anyone else, and more so than cars because they don't travel as quickly. But if crossings are provided at relatively short intervals, we will choose to cross at a regulated crossing most of the time. So I think the keys to that design are, in addition to those things, that the bicyclist or pedestrian themselves, who also doesn't want to get hit by the car, they will have pedestrian refuges between each of the motions, so they're able to look, assess that there isn't traffic coming, walk 10 feet to 20 feet, look again, walk 10 feet to 20 feet. And so they're able to manage their own risk in that way too by having the more frequent refuge islands.
So we'll just take a couple more questions, and then we'll move to the board, and we'll reconvene for more discussion and questions.
Okay, I have seen the diagrams, and I get the impression that you want to put sidewalks on both sides of Viewers Mill Road. There's already service roads with sidewalks on, well, where I live, it's on the other side. And what I'm saying is that there's already service roads and sidewalks there, and there are crosswalks and lights where pedestrians can cross if they run out of sidewalk.
Yeah.
And I just want to comment on that. And I also want to make a plea for any pedestrian, please carry a flashlight, wear a reflective jacket, something, because a lot of times I can't see you. And I'm trying to be very, very careful, but it's not always the driver's fault if somebody's hit.
Yeah. So I would say that we do recognize that there are sidewalks on many of the access roads or frontage roads. We typically did not include places where those sidewalks exist there as gaps in the sidewalk network, with one exception, although this exception does occur quite a bit. And that is if there is a bus stop in that landscaped space between the access road and the main line, then there should be a sidewalk to access that bus stop from both sides.
Thank you. Two quick things. With Viewers Mill Road, which is MD 586, being a state road,
Yes. How
effective can you collaborate with the state highway administration, since you are under a different jurisdiction? And then also, I just want to add to this lady regarding safety. If maybe in the budget, somebody's budget, they can put in PSAs like they used to when I grew up, how people should walk across the street, how people should, you know, these days I always hear it's not in the budget. So I'm looking, maybe having the budget to put in, like, you know, radios and television to keep on instilling it in people. So, I mean, yeah, they could use that, but if people aren't told this all the time, they can't. So, but anyway, thank you.
So we did talk about earlier how this is sort of focusing on the engineering solutions, but we do recognize that education is also a big part of achieving safety. And for the other part of that question.
Sure. So we are coordinating with the State Highway Administration as well as the Montgomery County DOT to let them know what we're doing and to kind of share the information with them as we're sharing it with you, so that we can kind of understand their perspective and work with them. You know, there will be, you know, I can't say that they're going to fully come on board and say, we're going to do everything that you've put in here tomorrow. But it is, you know, part of our plan process, not part of the Vision Zero work that we're talking about tonight, but part of our plan process is to identify the issues that are out there today and then propose solutions or recommend solutions to address some of those issues in the long term. And so we're looking at our plan as sort of a, you know, the list of things that everyone has told us about that we want to share with the State Highway Administration. And we want to make sure that the county and the state understand that these are priorities and that we've sort of begun with you to develop potential solutions to some of those challenges for them to consider in their implementation. Does anyone, any other team member want
to? Yeah, I think I can add to this. You know, we do the master planning and we have to work with all the agencies, including MCDOT and SHA. There's a great example of that right now for the Matthew Henson Trail crossing. There is an interagency working group that's being led by the head of Montgomery Parks to try to come up with a better solution at that crossing. And we meet on a regular basis, and we're trying to work together to come up with a solution. And actually, our master planning team is trying to add to that process as well. So it is a process where you have to work together with agencies that may have some different interests, but we, on all our master plans, we try to work with the agencies and try to come to consensus and come up with the best solutions.
Okay, one more question, and then we'll invite you to the boards to have further conversation and questions.
Thank you. My name is Val Hildebrand. I live the intersection of Farrar Drive and Veers Mill. Lots of good ideas. I would just like to know whether or not you are aware of and have considered, because every time you make a change, especially when it's speed and congestion, it causes an effect someplace else. Are you aware of the places, as this lady mentioned, where traffic is already bypassing intersections and streets to and coming through neighborhoods at 35 and 40 miles an hour? They're doing that now. Do you know where those places are in our neighborhood? I mean, and have you given some consideration to what this will do to the already increased traffic that we're seeing on the local roads? Number one, do you know about them? Can we tell you about them if you don't know about them? And is there a feedback mechanism very specifically dedicated to the fact that we've made changes on Veers Mill, Randolph, et cetera, that the people who live here can say, this has made a significant change to me and my neighborhood? And there's a direct way for us to let you know, and then can something be looked at to mitigate and change that?
So I think I can only speak to the first part. As far as knowing the specifics, I'm going to answer the second part of your first question first. And that was, can we tell you about those places? And that answer is yes. Please give us more information about where those cut-throughs occur. But as for the first part, while we are looking at Veers Mill as a corridor, any corridor is part of a network. And it was part of our process to consider what parallel routes exist or don't. One of the things that's really challenging about Veers Mill Road, as far as its role in the network, is that there aren't a lot of parallel routes that go its full length. And so even when people are cutting through neighborhoods, and I think the network shape gives us some good ideas of where that happens, even where they are cutting through neighborhoods, they have to point load back on to Veers Mill at an intersection, which causes intersection congestion again. And adds traffic to the neighborhoods and doesn't even necessarily improve their condition on the corridor much. So we do recognize that that is part of the challenge of this corridor and of this network. But I would love for you to come talk to us and with post-it notes or with markers kind of show us on that network map where those are occurring.
I think I'll also build on that and say, you know, the second part of your question, if you grabbed one of these, and I'm just going to borrow this on your way in, if you grabbed one of these, my name and telephone number and email are on the back, and you can get in touch with me in any way that you'd like to, because we'd certainly like to know about the changes that have been made, and if they're good, if they're bad, if they're, you know, what your thoughts are on those. And I'll show in a little bit. At the end of the meeting, I do have a link to our interactive feedback map, which is available on our website. If you, for some reason, you know, don't have time to talk to me tonight or to any of us in the room, then you can also go on our website and exactly show the location and put in a comment of, you know, what the challenges are or the changes that have been made. So there's a few different ways that you can get in touch. All right, so now I think we'll invite you guys to come back and chat at the boards. Thank you. Hi, everyone. We're going to start to gather back over here for the recap. All right, so thanks, everyone, for all the discussions of the boards. We're just going to kind of recap what we've heard so far, and certainly, you know, if we've missed anything that you said and you want to make sure that we hear, please do let us know. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Liz and Aditya.
Thanks. So I'll summarize some of the comments and discussions we had for the short-term boards. I think one consistent theme is these cannot be implemented soon enough. Some of the long terms are really long term, so that's one kind of a consistent theme. But also, starting with the bike facilities board, I think there is a understanding that, you know, two-way cycle tracks throughout the corridor would be preferred, because the cross-section right now keeps changing. We have responded to that with the facilities that are not continuous, but kind of, you know, facility type changes. So, you know, a lot of folks express that, you know, two-way separated cycle track is something that everybody feels more comfortable with. They would use it, and they would like to see it along the corridor. But of course, you know, there are some existing constraints in terms of the existing widths, the curbs, the right-of-ways. So it's kind of a balancing act. In terms of crossings, I heard a lot of folks say, you know, adding more opportunities to cross along the corridor, having more, you know, opportunities to stop at the pedestrian refuge islands. And then for the sidewalks, I mean, there's, you know, clearly a need for completing the sidewalk network, having continuous sidewalks. So that's something that's kind of a no-brainer. We need to kind of, you know, go ahead with that.
Great. Thank you. We had some really good discussions at the long-term concept boards as well. People did repeatedly note that, you know, these are very long-term concepts, and that is true. And there's a lot of time to make sure that your input is heard at every step of this. Additionally, I did hear concerns a few times that the cross-section that's there right now isn't necessarily as well maintained as people would hope. So what would the guarantee be that a future cross-section would be well maintained? Trees are great. What if they got overgrown and created conditions where people couldn't see and couldn't navigate clearly? And I think to that, we can harken back to the fact that it's a really long-term vision, and also that any cross-section has the potential to be implemented really well, and that part of the commitment to this corridor is the commitment to implement something well. So, yeah, I don't know if there are further...
apropos of nothing, but if you plant trees, for the love of God, don't plant anything that drops fruit. Yeah. Like black walnuts.
Got it. Yeah.
If you step on those things, unless you are an acrobat, you will fall. I did a month ago. My hands still hurt.
Yeah, fruiting trees in streets are contentious.
So just yeah. Little more to the walnuts.
Thank you. Does anyone else have questions that they'd like to address or comments that they'd like to address to the full group? Otherwise, we'll all be available for a little while longer.
All right, so I'll kind of close this out by mentioning if you didn't provide any feedback tonight and you still would like to provide something, if you go home and think, I should have talked about this, you're welcome, as I mentioned before, to call me, email me, you know, get in touch any way you can. My contact information is on those flyers that were distributed out at the table. You can also go online to our website, which is www.montgomeryplanning.org, and it's /Beers Mill, and that will take you to our webpage. There's an opportunity there for an interactive feedback map where you can pick a location on the map and then show us your question or comment. And this is representative of the comments that we had received as of our last meeting on October 4th. Just to let you know about next steps, we are at sort of the, you know, in the last few segments of our community outreach portion of our plan. And we will, we're planning to come back to you one more time to share with you our preliminary recommendations for the plan. We're currently targeting December 13th for that meeting. And we will, you know, as we're able to confirm the date and the location, we'll certainly get information back out to you via, you know, our telephone calls, our press releases, our usual way of communicating the date and the time. We then anticipate that we will present those preliminary recommendations after we receive your feedback to the planning board in early January. and will then be working with the planning board over the course of the winter and the spring until we reach a planning board draft in the spring. So that's kind of where we are and where we're going. Does anyone have any questions on that? Yes.
It's really nice to talk about your design and what we may benefit from. I wonder if
So in the process for master plans, we will share the recommendations and the draft of the plan with the county executive and the county departments, and they will review the plan and provide feedback to us as part of the review of that plan. So there's sort of that collaboration component that's built into the process. But then we are also, you know, for this portion of the plan in particular, you know, having conversations with the Montgomery County Department of Transportation, as well as the State Highway Administration on the things that we're talking about here tonight, to make sure that we are, you know, collaborating and, you know, not putting forward things that haven't been discussed with the departments that are in charge of the operation and the maintenance of the roadway.
Just wanted to add, Carrie Sanders, I'm with Montgomery County Planning. That's actually a really important question to ask. And Jessica touched on this earlier, but the county is also doing a Vision Zero action plan at the same time that this plan is being done. This will be the first plan that actually has a Vision Zero component to it. So it is good timing because the county at the same, you know, county's focus on Vision Zero, and at the same time we're doing this. So as the county starts to flesh out what that program looks like, this is a great opportunity for them to do some short-term, five-year type of improvements that build upon what their plan is. So I do encourage you to kind of stay involved in the plan, come to the planning board public hearing and perhaps the council public hearing, and just make sure that you're staying engaged because, yes, we will certainly convey these things to the different departments, but it will be incumbent upon Department of Transportation to implement these things. And as I said, the timing is good for that. So, yeah.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Okay, well, thanks again, everyone, for being here tonight. And we hope to see you in mid-December.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
Can I just ask a very curious question in regards to the dedicated bike lanes? So, like, if there's a when you're in your bike and you're in a dedicated bike lane, are you not allowed to cross over into the motorist lane? I'm very curious about that.
Yeah. So that does depend on the jurisdiction. There are some places where I think it is Maryland law that if a bike lane is present, that the bicyclist must use the bike lane as long as it is safe and practicable to do so. So if there's a blockage or something, then bicyclists are expected to merge out into regular traffic and expected to operate as traffic in places where there aren't bike lanes, right? There are some places where the two-way protected bike lane has been deemed to be a path, and bicyclists are not necessarily obligated to use a path. So if there are settings where there's been a conflict, that is a strategy that some jurisdictions use to make sure that bicyclists can use the road flexibly. It would be a very rare bicyclist who would opt for Veers Mill corridor in traffic as opposed to the facility. That person would try that twice.
Yes.
With regard to the Department of Transportation in Montgomery County maintaining roads, the service roads, who is actually responsible for maintaining them? The county along Deer's Hollow or the state? The reason I ask that is because if it's not plowed, I'll call the state and they'll say it's the county, and the county will say it's the state. My wife and I decide that people dismiss it. We don't know. I don't know.
So that's actually one of the things that we were talking about with regard to maintenance, that, you know, there's a lot of confusion as to who's responsible. My understanding is that the county is responsible for the service road, but the state is responsible for the main road. And clarification from Steve.
So if, in case anyone couldn't hear him, he said that even on the main line, the sidewalks are the county's responsibility. So the county is responsible for the curb of the main line out.
All right. So one other note, the presentation as well as an audio recording of tonight will also be available on our website. So if you want to check back in for anything to put your comment on the feedback Mac, please feel free to do so. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thank you.